the Rise Up See Red podcast, all about the Arizona Cardinals and the NFL, featuring insider and outsider perspectives. Enjoy the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Now here are your hosts, Jess Root and Seth Cox.
Hello, Arizona Cardinals fans, and welcome to the latest edition of the Rise Up See Red podcast. I'm your host, Jess Root, from CardsWire.com, the USA Today NFL wire site. With me on a Tuesday night recording is Seth Cox from RevengeOfTheBirds.com and also one of the hosts of the original Draft Breakdown podcast. And this is the mock draft episode. It is episode 419, and I had to go back through that. I couldn't remember which year we started it because I've been doing the show since 2013, July 2013. was the first episode, and this was just a little before Seth, because I was me and a couple other guys, I can't remember who it was, on the podcast for a little bit before Seth joined. But our first mock draft was 2015. It was the DJ Humphries draft, and I think we both had like Bud Dupree or Shane Ray or something that year, and then DJ Humphries' pick came out of nowhere. So this is our ninth mock draft, where we take the first round and try to make our predictions. Some are awful. We've nailed a few Cardinals picks over the years, and we'll be honest, as inaccurate as mock drafts are, ours haven't been bad. We've had, I think as many as like 25 players or so that we had in the first round, going in the first round. We've had as many as 8 or 9 players pegged to teams. The drafts, the trades happen, but like where we predict that they will land, they end up at least not necessarily team and pick. So we do like, and Seth has a little bit of inside knowledge that he runs across. He has a few more sources that I do. Most of the information I get are from Seth, and I have a few, and they're not sources that I can use for anything. But there's some knowledge that I get from within the Cardinals. This year is different though, right? Because this is not a Steve Keim draft, so we don't actually know what's happening.
Correct, and that's where you kind of just sit and watch and, you kind of learn this year, and that's what we're looking at. And we're waiting to see, what happens and how this all comes together. And quite frankly, it won't be even next year where we feel super confident in what we know, but it'll be a little bit easier. And, as that continues, that's where we'll continue to gather more information and kind of learn more about this team and this organization and what they have and what they, what they believe is important. And that's where we're at. We have an idea and we'll talk about a couple of scenarios as things go, but we do know that Monty Austenfort and Dave Sears, from what they've done with the teams they were with previously, They put an emphasis on the premier positions. We've seen, Monty be part of drafts that involved, offensive linemen early, cornerbacks early, edge rushers early, and the same obviously for Dave Sears in Detroit. And so that's, I think you and I both are excited about that, because while we liked guys like Deion Buchanan and Hassan Reddick, even though he did play a premier position once he finally figured it all out, and those guys, and then obviously now Isaiah Simmons and Zaven Collins, you have to look at the fact that those positions especially are not key positions. And it's the conversation we kind of had with Buda Baker, right? Buda Baker is as close to elite without probably being elite as you can get. I mean, he is borderline elite in this league, and he's been part of two of the worst defenses in the NFL in the last four seasons. And again, he is, a borderline all pro player every single year. And so when you have, when your best players are safeties and linebackers, it usually doesn't spell for good things. And yeah, so you just
especially
have to...
now we can say, so there's a couple of examples where that does happen. Okay. When you look at the safeties that Seattle had and their linebackers they had, but they also had Richard Sherman, a corner.
Right.
Baltimore back in the day when they had, I can't remember his name.
Ray Lewis.
Ray Lewis, Ed Reed. Ed Reed was right. I can't remember. Ray Lewis, Ed Reed. But they also had Terrell Suggs. And they had Siragusa in the middle and stuff like that. So.
Well, and the thing is, even with, like, you know, people always talk about that, like Seattle, like the Legion of Boom and how great they were. But the question becomes, do you have 2 to 3 all pros in your secondary, or do you just have, you know, a guy that's obviously great, but, like, you know, that's the extent. And that's, you know, when you look at it, that's what it comes down to. And that's what you have to kind of look through and look at. You know, you look at their starters on defense, you know, Richard Sherman, like you said, and Earl Thomas were both all pros. You know, and then
Cam
off the
Chancellor
bench,
was fantastic.
Yeah,
whoever their second cornerback didn't really matter, because 3 of their 4 guys in the secondary were
Pro Bowlers.
Yeah, absolutely fantastic.
And so that's the thing is, you know, and obviously as Cardinals fans, we'd be like, hey, 1 Super Bowl, that'd be fantastic. But, you know, that only led to 1 Super Bowl win. And then as those guys, the other thing about that secret, or that, you know, the secret to all of that was, it was all while they were on rookie contracts, right? Like, and then as soon as they all started to having to get paid, and now they had to start sacrificing other positions, right? Then all of a sudden that's when things started to go bad. Remember, you know, Michael Bennett was fantastic up front, but, you know, they were starting guys like Brandon Mebane and I don't remember the guy's first name. Ruben was the last name. And, you know, and then because they were paying Earl Thomas, they were paying Cam Chancellor, they were paying Richard Sherman. And so, you know, and so then all of a sudden you were having to fill in the gaps with guys that were a little worse. And then all of a sudden their defense, you know, became worse every season. And that's not unexpected. So it's like catching lightning in the bottle. Like you would have had to have had, you know, Isaiah Simmons, Zaven Collins, and Buda Baker, all three as all pro players at the same time before you had to start paying them all. Does that make sense?
Like, yeah.
That's how it worked for them. And then once those guys all got paid, and you throw in Bobby Wagner too, who's a multi-time all pro, great player. But once those guys all got paid, all of a sudden you started having guys, you know, that weren't great or weren't.
Yeah. The defensive line, especially.
Right. And then all of a sudden that second corner position, and then all of a sudden Cam Chancellor gets hurt. And now you're paying Cam Chancellor, but he can't play. So now you're trying to, and so just, it all makes, you know, it all comes out in the wash, but like drafting those non-premium positions is usually not the best way to do it. The other thing was, none of those guys were first round picks. That's the other thing, right? I think Earl Thomas might've been, but outside of Earl, I don't think any of those guys were first round picks. They were all day 2, and in Sherman's case, a day 3 pick. So it just, you know, it just ended up working out overall. Yeah. And Thomas was a first round pick, but outside of that, you know, Cam Chancellor he might have even been a day 3 pick. I'm checking right now. Yeah, I mean, Cam Chancellor and Richard Sherman were both 5th round picks. Like, honestly, sometimes it's better to be lucky than good, right?
Yeah, like, totally.
So that's where you come to, and that's where we're at this week. You know, we'll start to learn a little bit about what Monty and Dave's philosophy, and I think Jonathan's going to have a big impact in everything.
Yeah.
you know, because he's...
And it's interesting because the conversations that we've heard, the times that the JG's talked to the media, Monty Austin Ford, that recently, it feels like that Gannon's take on player evaluation is, I want that guy on my team. These players I want in the organization. And he lets the front office rank them. He lets them do the board part. And Gannon is about, is he a fit? Is he a good football fit? And is he a good character fit for our team? And then they handle the rank. Because it's going to be interesting, because Keim always kind of described the process of how they built their board. They did. He kind of gave us a picture of how they do it. They do this, they do this, and then they do this. We know nothing about that. Austin Ford didn't talk about it at all.
But that's the thing, too, is you look at it, and I think you hit on something that's going to be a real, real key to this organization, and something that we've been hearing about from the beginning, but also now that's, you know, even more important. And that's guys that want to buy in and guys that want to be here. I think building a culture, and we've talked, you know, you and I being in just regular everyday life stuff.
Regular jobs.
Right. You talk about culture, you and I talk about culture all the time, and like how that makes such a difference for your work environment. And so for them, you know, I think that's something that we saw this last weekend when they made it a point to make sure that they were at Kyler Murray's Heisman statue unveiling.
That was like, really cool to see, because it wasn't just like, now he had a bunch of teammates out there as well, and a former teammate at Antoine Wesley. Side note, the amount of things that Antoine Wesley shows up in is hilarious. That, but aside the point, the fact that it was half of the offensive staff. It was basically every offensive staff member, every offensive coach who has any connection to Kyler. It was, well, it was GM. It was the head coach. It was the offensive coordinator. It was the quarterback's coach, and it was their Bill Bedwell fellowship guy, and I believe he's going to work with quarterbacks.
Yeah, and so that's, I mean, like you said, that just is. That's just creating a culture and of accountability and wanting to be a part of something. And I think that we're going to see that in this draft too. So, you know, before we get into this, and I wanted to get your take, and I haven't even prepped you for this, so it'll be fun. But I really do think that based off of what we've heard from the Bob McGinn articles and things like that, I do think that that means that a guy like Jalen Carter would likely not be somebody they look to draft.
I agree. And I also, I think of all the evidence, because we know I don't know if they did all 30 prospects, but we know 24 of them. And Carter was not one of them. And often you bring in guys where you have some questions. Carter, yeah, definitely have questions, right?
Right, right.
And so exactly, he definitely would have been a top 30 guy if he were on their board.
Right, exactly. And I think that's something, you know, and again, we will never know for sure unless they trade down to, like, let's say the Commanders want to go up to from 16, right?
Yeah.
And they're sitting there, and then somehow Carter's still on the board.
Then they're like, okay.
And they're like, nope, we're going to take Kalijah Kansi or somebody else, you know, in that range.
you really know.
Yeah. And then you'll be like, well, Jalen Carter was just not on their board. Like, there was no, but yeah, I mean, but I just feel like what they're talking about, what they're trying to sell to the organization or the team as a whole, is it is saying that we don't want somebody that isn't going to buy in and put the energy into what we're looking for. So I think that's important, which, you know, is going to be what's interesting, because, you know, we both, small spoiler alert, but we both have them trading down, and so you would think if Carter's available, would he be a guy that they would consider? And one of us says no. And so that'll be what's interesting to kind of follow along with and see what happens in this situation, because I definitely don't think they can sit at three and take him, but I just don't know if what we know about him right now is if he's a guy that you can even, if you even want to bring in.
Yeah. And before we get started with the actual mock, there is so much. It's so interesting right now. It's been so under wraps what the Cardinals are kind of planning, other than the fact it feels like trade. That's what basically everyone with any sort of connection, any sort of inside connection to the Cardinals has been saying. They want to trade, they want to trade, they want to trade, they want to trade. And then it was Will Anderson. Now it's very interesting, some of the stuff that's coming out. Todd McShay teased the idea of that offensive line that might be their target. Mike Garofalo came out on Tuesday saying that Kyler is pounding the table for Paris Johnson. He's made it known to the organization, and we know. So we've talked about it on the show. Steve Keim has joked about it, about the fact that Kyler is always in their ear telling the players that they want. And we know some of the players that he's pounded the table for, who the Cardinals didn't draft, and guess what, have been absolutely fantastic. You know, we go back to, who was it? Oh, crap. And I wrote about it today as well. He wanted Creed Humphrey. Tristan Wirfs. He wanted Tristan Wirfs in 2020. He wanted Creed Humphrey the next year.
Yeah. And so it's just one of those situations that guys, you know, and I think we know this based on just some contextual things that we've heard, but it's interesting that allegedly they didn't draft Creed Humphrey because they didn't want a left-handed center. And Duke Manyweather, who trained Creed and everything, has stated that there were a number of teams that that asked him to train Creed to snap right-handed. Jeez. And it's like, hey, who was Kyler Murray's center in college? Oh, wait, it was Creed Humphrey.
Right.
Like it was going to be some, I don't know, man. Like,
I don't know. Well, it's kind of interesting. And does it feel like to you, this before we get, does it feel like that the organization, that the head coach, the general manager, they're going out of their ways to try to mend some fences with Kyler?
Yeah, and it feels like that they take what he wants, prefers, whatever, however you want to talk about it, into consideration, which is something that we know that Steve Keim kind of laughed off, right?
It's cute. It's cute that you want to tell me who to draft, but right. I'm the GM.
Right. And so it's just like, you know, let's see how this all works out and you know,
because it's interesting
there.
That it comes out, because we've heard about particular players after the fact, but the fact this is coming out now before the draft, and the fact that Johnson is a name that's connected to the Cardinals quite, and it's coming out from national reporters and things like that, that, you know, even a number three Johnson could be the guy, or they want to trade back, that so that it's becoming well known that the Cardinals value that, or that they understand that Kyler's got an eye for talent, and
or both.
Kyler knows ball, like Danny right. Kelly pointed out to me. Kyler knows ball, and so maybe they're a little bit more in sync with that type of purpose. And so, you know, whether it's offensive line, well, and the fact that, you know, 10 of the Cardinals' top 30 visits were offensive linemen. And so, yeah, we had to know. So let's go ahead and get started. So coming up next on the Rise of Secret Podcast, the best of our Cardinals talk on the web, we will begin with our mock draft. We will go through kind of the first 10 picks and go from there. That's coming up next on Rise of Secret. We're back on the Rise of Sea Red podcast, best of our Cardinals talk on the web. It is time to mock the first round. We've had some good years before. We know that accurate mock drafts hit on like six to nine, even a good mock draft hits on for like six to 10 players maybe. And that's because after the first part of the draft, things go crazy. Things might go crazy with number two. Pick number one. We both have the same guy. The betting odds heavily suggest it. We both have the Panthers taking Bryce Young. Even though, wasn't it about a month ago when it kind of felt like it was going to be CJ Stroud?
Yeah, so it'll be interesting because this is, this is something that it feels like that's where it's at now, like you said. But at the same time, it feels like that it's too certain. Does that make sense?
Like, I mean, yeah. But like the fact that that stupid anonymous guy on Reddit got on and said that Levis has been telling him that the Panthers are going to draft him, then that wildly changed the betting odds for a time. Any prediction where Will Levis becomes the number one overall pick over Bryce Young, the Heisman, and CJ Stroud at a big time program who was amazing, and instead it's Will Levis who you're like, why? We still think why is anyone looking at Will Levis this way?
Yeah, that's such a fair question and something that I can identify. And that's why, we both still have him going top five because we just can't.
We don't understand it, but that's what we keep hearing.
Right. So it's got to happen, right? Like, they can't be lying this much.
So, number one, we are on board with each other. Bryce Young going to the Panthers. It makes a lot of sense. You know, if the number one pick, honestly, it should be Young or it should be Stroud. It shouldn't be anyone else. When you have a quarterback needy team, right? That's basically it. It should be Young, it should be Stroud, and that's it.
Yeah, it feels like it. It feels like it would be silly for it not to be, but it's one of those situations that I genuinely don't even know why Levis is in this conversation, but
maybe this is just Levis's people trying to make it, Lonzo, like the whole Ball family thing, trying to just make it happen, speak it into existence.
Right, exactly.
And so yeah, but pick number two is where we both have two things. One, it's crazy on my end and crazy on your end. So you go with, you're trusting with what people are saying is that the Texans aren't going to take a quarterback.
Yeah, I stayed with the chalk or the betting odds in this situation. And I went with Tyree Wilson. The strong surge in this doesn't mean anything, but it just makes it feel like we always say Vegas isn't in the business of losing money. So, are they able to,
there's some, like, they know when there's smoke, there's a little bit of fire. Like, really the only time where it feels like that they were just way off base was with Malik Willis. That's really in recent years. That's the one where Vegas just plain got it wrong.
Right. And so, you just look at it, you have to, we'll see what happens, but yeah, I'm going to go Tyree Wilson here.
And me, I refuse to believe that the Texans in their quarterback situation would not take a quarterback with the number two pick. Now, I don't like the pick that I'm projecting. I think it's stupid, but I haven't taken Will Levis. I haven't taken Will Levis going number two overall. I don't know why they're taking Will Levis, but I refuse to believe until it actually happens that they're not going to take a quarterback. And so I'm saying, okay, they're going to take a quarterback. And while CJ Stroud is the one that makes sense, they're not. But then that's going to be the most Texans thing to happen, and they take Will Levis second overall, which leads us to the Cardinals pick. We both have them doing the same thing, and we have the pick being the same, but we have them going to different teams. Tell us about your reasoning for the pick.
Yeah, I went with the Las Vegas Raiders trading up and taking CJ Stroud at 3. The Raiders come in, they offer 38, and they offer they offer 38, they offer 100, and then next year's number one. And I think if in that case you go ahead and take it, because you're not moving too far down. In this case, Wilson's gone, but you know, you still have Will Anderson and Paris Johnson on the board if that's where they want to go.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. And I have, you know, I'm going to tease that I'm going with the Todd McShay tease, because he came out with his, it wasn't his mock draft, but it was stuff he was hearing from people from the league. In that, one, the Cardinals were targeting offensive line, and he suggested, well, that they'd be targeting a particular lineman and moving back to do it. And he said, well, for example, if they move all the way back to number 11, that feels purposely placed, like the Titans were in the running for it. And so with that, I have the Titans moving up to, and it's especially because it is C.J. Stroud, they move up to number 3. Get C.J. Stroud, and here is the haul that the Cardinals get. I think this is the minimum they get, at least the minimum. So they pick up number 11, they get number 41, their second-round pick this year. They get their next year first, and they get a 2025 second, maybe a first. I think that's kind of the logistic, because if you look at the trade that the 49ers did to go up from 12 to 3, they gave up two future firsts and a future third. They didn't give up any additional picks that year. And so they, in 2021, they moved up. They gave up their first and third from 2022 and their first from 2023. I don't think the Cardinals make a deal without adding a second or third round pick this year. I think that is part of the deal. They want picks now and they want picks later. So getting Tennessee's second means that they're willing to go with a 2025 second instead of a first, because they get the second rounder this year instead of a third rounder next year. And they still get Tennessee's one next year, which could be super valuable because the Titans might be a disaster. So Seth has the Cardinals now picking 7th. I have them picking 11th. C.J. Stroud is still the number 3 pick. And both Seth and I now have 2 of the 3 first picks as the same. I've got quarterbacks going 1, 2, and 3. Seth with now there's 2 quarterbacks on the board, which leads us to the Colts pick. I'm going to say they have to pick a quarterback, and they take Anthony Richardson. They're sad because they don't get Will Levis. I don't know why they're sad, but you have them taking Levis.
Yeah, so Levis is on the board here. They are able to grab him at 4. It'll be interesting to see what happens if for some reason Stroud is not picked at 3 by any team, or 2 for that matter.
Yeah, I think Stroud being available, especially if the Texans make a pick at 2 and don't trade out of it, I think that's a win for the Cardinals. I think Stroud being on the board means that they can trade the pick. If they don't, they might get stuck. They might get stuck because I think are the Colts going to be stubborn? Is that kind of how it's feeling like right now, that the Colts are going to be stubborn?
Yeah, and they're not going to move that pick. I talked to a couple people that have a feeling for the Colts, and that's what the conversation is that they're going to sit there. And, you know, it's interesting because the feeling I'm getting is that the coaching staff would love to get Stroud and the owner loves Will Levis. So we'll see. We'll see how that all plays out.
Is
a bit of a strange duck. So
that moves on to number 5, the Seattle Seahawks, the division rivals. They both get deep the in for both of our picks. They get a defensive player. I have them going the route of Jalen Carter, the Georgia defensive tackle, even though both pass rushers are on the board. I'm thinking about what they did. Well, they've been connected to Carter most of the offseason. They went and signed Draymond Jones. They brought back Jaron Reed. They tried to sign Zach Allen, even though when they signed Draymond Jones, which means they're looking for more defensive interior help. And that's where Carter comes in. And so that's where I have them right now, that I have them targeting Carter instead of Anderson.
Yeah, and I just went Anderson. I went, even though it sounds a lot like that's where they're headed, right? That they are very interested in Jalen Carter. I just went with who I think is the superior player in that.
Well, and that does make sense because they might love Carter, but just not be expecting Anderson to be on the board.
Right. And so that takes us to the Lions at 6, and we go different ways here.
And then we go, so the Detroit Lions, I have them jumping all over Will Anderson. I think Dan Campbell is going to absolutely love a pairing of Aiden Hutchinson and Will Anderson on that defensive line. Going to contend since the offense was not the problem last year. Their defense was all the problem last year until late. And so build that defense, create bookend pass rushers for that team. I think it's exactly what Campbell wants to do. You have a monkey wrench.
Yeah, so, all the Cardinals chit-chat, all the smoke that they love Paris Johnson. There's another team that allegedly loves Paris Johnson. And the Lions are sitting pretty. This pick is actually the Rams pick, as we Cardinals fans know and like to laugh about. Obviously, they got away with it since they ended up being a Super Bowl champion one time. But a team that has been looking to improve their offensive line, and a team that has a couple of basically first-round picks and then would give up next year's first-round pick and next year's third-round pick to move up. So they give up 17 and 32 in this draft, even though it technically is the first pick of the second round, and then their first-round pick and third-round pick next year. And the Pittsburgh Steelers move up and take Paris Johnson Jr.
And Kyler's sad. Kyler is sad, which takes us to the number 7 pick, which for me is still the Raiders, but for Seth, it is the Cardinals. What direction do the Cardinals go? So no Tyree Wilson, no Will Anderson, no Paris Johnson. Who is the pick for you?
Yeah, I go with Christian Gonzalez. It'll be interesting because there's been a lot of people that are complaining or have concerns about Christian Gonzalez's physicality, but I don't think that's actually anything to worry about. And I think his size and athleticism actually projects really well to what the Cardinals and Jonathan Gannon like to do on defense. So we'll see how that works out, but he's a guy that likes, to be kind of the man on defense. He enjoys the ability to be a alpha cornerback one. And I think that, in Gannon's defense, and I know Nick Rallis will be calling it, but I think Jonathan Gannon will have a hand in it, that'll give the Cardinals a really nice building block at a premier position that they haven't really addressed lately.
Absolutely.
And somebody that will, be just, kind of a hit here in the Valley.
I really like Gonzalez is one of my wits. So if Will Anderson is not available, Christian Gonzalez is one of the guys I want if he's on the board. With the Raiders pick, I'm thinking kind of the same thing, only instead of Gonzalez, he is a cornerback that as of Tuesday is going to go higher than people think. I didn't think that he was going to go low. They take Devon Witherspoon, the kid out of Illinois. Great tape. Kind of the cornerback version of Buda Baker, which You know, if people are complaining about Gonzalez, I'd be more worried about Witherspoon and his style of play.
Yeah, and so we'll see how that all works out. But yeah, I think you've got a guy in Witherspoon who, like you said, I don't know if he's going to be able to stick on the boundary that as like a cornerback one, but I think he's a guy that 100% without a doubt is going to play a lot of snaps and at minimum
he'll be like cornerback two that slides between the two, right?
Right, and that's where I see him at. And so, you know, just looking at what Gannon, you know, wants and the Cardinals need, I could see them preferring Gonzalez, but I don't think either of those guys, if that was the pick,
I think they're both fantastic choices for any team near the top
right.
of the draft.
Yeah, exactly.
And going to number eight, we've got the Falcons. And this is where the cornerbacks go. So Seth has Gonzalez going number seven to the Cardinals. I have him going number eight to the Falcons, giving them a nice pairing of A.J. Terrell and Christian Gonzalez. But Seth has a fun one for the Falcons here.
Yeah, I have them going crazy and grabbing Bijan Robinson and just continuing to kind of grow that offense. And then you go back to what Art Smith did with you know, as the offensive coordinator at Tennessee, and you and I talked about it last week when we discussed running backs, and you asked, you know, is this a guy that can be similar to like a Derrick Henry or a Jonathan Taylor or a Zeke Elliott? And I think he can, and I think that would, you know, mean that a guy who had one of those guys in Arthur Smith would want to try to get a new one, even though, like we talked about, Tyler Allgeier is a very good running back.
That said, Tyler Allgeier is also a sixth round guy. Cardinals fans should know this. Late round running backs that flash sometimes only flash for a year and a half.
Right, exactly. So you just got to figure out what's the best play here. So, you know, it'll be interesting, but, you know, I think that takes us to the Bears. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I had the Cardinals getting sniped from allegedly their, you know, one of their guys, and in, you know, back to back to back picks, you have them getting sniped of guys that they allegedly could like. So, what I mean, so I can go first. I have the Jalen Carter slide in my board.
Well, and we, this is what we've heard, is that he's not getting past the Bears period, right?
So here, let's say this, and let's go all the way back to February before any of this happened. Is it not insane to think that the Bears were tied to Jalen Carter at number one,
right?
And then they trade back, get a haul of picks and a number one wide receiver, and then they somehow
end up with Carter. That's amazing.
Would that not have been like one of the best?
That's the best, one of the best manipulations ever. Now Jalen Carter seems to know he's going in the top 10. And the things that I've heard from things I've read, that he's not going to get past the Bears. So, fantastic job, Bears. Whether they manipulated that, I don't think they manipulated that, because who knew that report was going to come out on them? Oh, dang. Clippers didn't. The Suns didn't cover. I had them covering the 12.5. Sorry, but that's, you know.
No, they made it ugly at the end of the game.
Yeah.
They decided they wanted to get in a 3-point shootout with them, and the Clippers just kept making them, and the Suns did not.
Yes, and for me, I have the Bears going with the offensive line, since in my case, Jalen Carter came off the board at number five. The Bears, yes, this happens. 9, 10, and 11 are kind of outside of Will Anderson, so it goes basically five picks in a row from seven from 6 to 10 are all players that I think are on the Cardinals' wish list. Will Anderson, Devon Weatherspoon, Christian Gonzalez, number 8. Paris Johnson, the tackle, the guy that Kyler Murray wants, goes to the Bears at number 9. And then I have the Eagles taking Tyree Wilson. That's where, you know, for me, I know the Cardinals, this came out was Monday or Tuesday, that the Cardinals cleared Tyree Wilson medically. So they have no medical concerns about his surgically repaired foot. That might be a concern for other teams, and I see him slipping. And then the Eagles, who already are great on the pass rush, but they do need to rebuild that defense a little bit. They land Tyree Wilson with the 10th overall pick, meaning 5 straight picks, which are kind of wish lists for Cardinals. Like, they're high on my list. Anderson, Wilson, Gonzalez, Witherspoon, Paris Johnson, they're all off the board before the Cardinals pick at number 11.
Yeah, and so, you know, I had Carter going, you had Paris Johnson, then the Eagles, and we both kind of are in the same thought process while also going about it different ways. And you had him taking Tyree, I went with Nolan Smith going there.
Coming up next on the Rise of Sea Red podcast, Best Star Cardinals Talk on the Web, let's go with the next 10 picks in the draft. For me, that means the Cardinals are next. Coming up next on Rise of Sea Red. We're back on the Rise Up Series podcast, the Best Our Cardinals Talk on the Web. We're at pick number 11 for Seth's mock. That means the Tennessee Titans are still there. And for me, that means the Arizona Cardinals. Give me your Titans pick here.
Yeah, so, you know, the Titans stay. They tried to move up, couldn't move up. And instead, they sit and they get a guy in Anthony Richardson who Peter King had him going, I think, in the 20s. In his mock draft, which, like you said, the Malik Willis one was the craziest one last year, but Anthony Richardson is not far off, right? Like,
yeah,
everybody's kind of all over the place on him. You took him at 4, but that was because Will Levis wasn't there,
right?
You know, so it'll be interesting to see how that works out. Like, if both Levis and Richardson are on the board, who's the pick? It'll be super fun to watch, but yeah, like I said, I have them going there.
And for the Cardinals, this is where I used, again, the Todd McShay teases from Monday. One that was targeting offensive line. Specifically, he talked about Peter Skoronski, the tackle out of Northwestern, who, depending on who you talk to, many believe he's a lock to be a great guard, but can play tackle. Some think he'll be able to play tackle in the league, but he does easily this year, since we have the unknown at left guard. Skoronski can easily slide right into the left guard spot. McShay seems to be McShay's heard that he's being targeted, and that even if the Cardinals traded back to number 11, he could be available. So I went with that information. Okay, let's roll with this scenario. The Cardinals move all the way back to number 11, and Skoronski's on the board. So they get perhaps like one of the most talented linemen in the draft. The question really only means that we've got now is he going to play guard or tackle? But it does make an interesting parallel, because what was Steve Keim's very first pick in 2013 as GM? It was a guard. Like you talked about on the Sully Show, people look at Rashawn Slater as, okay, yeah, he can play left tackle in the league. You know, Rashawn Slater had elite athletic traits. Skoronski's not bad. He's just not elite.
He's a near elite athlete as a guard, but like you said, as a tackle, he gets by.
Yeah, and so he might be able to play tackle, but the Cardinals already are pretty good at tackle, because between their starters of DJ Humphries and Kelvin Beachum, you've got Josh Jones that you can believe is a starting caliber type guy. So Skoronski's a perfect match right there, and you don't even have to switch him sides. And so one of the things
and imagine his and you and I've talked about this, but his closest comp is a guy that played left tackle all his career at Notre Dame, and then got drafted 16th overall, so not quite as high, by the Cowboys. And he's only been a six-time All-Pro, eight-time Pro Bowler, and then was on the 2010 Hall of Fame team, and that's that's Zach Martin.
Yes.
Like, it, like you said, it almost – it. If he's your starting left guard and you need to figure out your center still, and that's something we'll get to, you know, in a little bit, spoiler, maybe not alert. but like you look at it, like if you go Humphrey, Skoronski, insert center, Hernandez, and then you let Jones and Beecham fight it out.
You feel really good about that group.
Right. You feel much better than you do, you know, in other ways. So it'll just be interesting to see how it goes.
We move on to pick number 12. We have the Texans. Believe it or not, Seth has them taken and pass rusher twice in the first round. What are they doing?
Yeah, they keep going and they go with Lucas Van Ness. Why not just, you know, kind of, if you're not going to take a quarterback, why not just double down and try to
Let D'Amico Ryan do his defensive thing.
Right. And they don't have much. I mean, outside of the Cardinals, maybe, I don't know of a defensive, you know, front line, however you want to put it. I'm assuming they'll play a 4-3, but that, you know, that is not as good as what you see with, with the Texans. So you get two young stud athletic freaks, both have high-end comps. We've talked about it. You know, you've got a super high-end, you know, comp of Chandler Jones, and you've got a super high-end comp for Van Ness of Preston Smith. You know, and even if they become 80% of those players, holy
cow,
that's
pretty good. That's still great.
That's yeah. Those are two guys that are getting you 8 to 11 sacks a season. Like that's huge.
And I have them going the exact opposite direction. They double down on the defense for Seth. I'm going with this is what freaking makes sense. They take the quarterback, even though it's not the quarterback I would pick for them, number two. And then they give him a weapon, going with the Ohio State receiver, Jaxon Smith-Njigba, best receiver, most talented receiver in this draft class. And so you get your signal caller. And then you give him a weapon, and so that's kind of the way I went, which makes the Packers sad.
Oh, and by the way, 100%. I would if they draft a quarterback, who by the way I don't have, I have Jaxon Smith-Njigba available. So if they draft a quarterback, I 100% think that this is the way to go. Let me ask you this. If they, for some reason, don't draft a quarterback, what would have made the most sense to you? They don't need a left tackle, obviously, because they have Laremy Tunsil, one of the best in the NFL. Would you still go Smith-Njigba, or would you like look to continue to boost the – like, where would you have gone with this?
So
if you didn't take Will Levis at two, but instead – maybe you take Tyree Wilson just because that's the chalk pick.
So if Wilson's take gone there, you know, I might consider a guy like Broderick Jones. You might give him Bijan Robinson. And also, I think also as well, you might end up going with, Kalijah Kansi, I think.
Yeah, and so it's just interesting. Like, it just becomes really interesting what they do if they don't take a quarterback at two. It just, because then it, like, what on earth do they do? Like
that's just the thing that just makes no sense. Like, and we talked about in one of the last shows that, well, what if they don't take a quarterback number two? Well, then maybe they trade up from 12 to get their guy, and that also feels like a weird thing to do since the quarterback is the one that's harder to find.
Right. if anything, and Justin talked about this quite a bit the other day, if anything, it's really tough for the Texans because the Colts and Titans are in their division and need quarterbacks. So it feels like there's little to no chance in either of those teams are trading up to two. So the only team with, you know, that might is the Raiders. And so, and why would they, you know, do it at that point? Like, they're probably going to see what comes off the board first. It's just really interesting to look at, because the Texans might have overplayed their hand from
we'll figure the Houston Texans messing things up, right?
Right. And from the last game of the season where they won.
Oh my gosh.
Right? Like instead of getting Bryce Young, the guy they allegedly super covet, and then instead of caving to the Bears, you've overplayed your hand to the point now where, you know, you either take a quarterback you don't love, allegedly, or you leave the draft and you saddle your first year defensive coach with
Davis Mills.
Like, it just is.
Who was part of the last two terrible years.
Yeah, it just seems so absurd. But I mean, the Texans don't make sense anyways. That takes us to the Green Bay Packers, who don't have a Hall of Fame quarterback for the first time. Like, what do they do?
Here's a question.
You got to get him help, right?
Might they move up to? I haven't thought, but it has to. You think they're sold on Jordan Love? Or what if they moved up?
I think they have to give Love a year.
That makes sense. That makes sense.
I think they just have to give Love a season, and then once that happens, you know, they'll change. Can we talk about how crazy that trade was, though? For
that was
sides?
An odd trade.
Like, one, why are you flipping first round picks? And then if you're the Jets, why are you putting all these allocations on the next pick? Like, are they that afraid that he's going to retire after one season?
Maybe.
Like, it was that,
which is weird, because Rodgers is the one to say, yeah, I want to play for the Jets. So, yeah.
Yeah, it's just, it feels super weird. But like you said, now you're sitting here, you've got Jordan Love, David Bakhtiari's been super injured. You don't know what you have.
So
a lot of wide receivers without Aaron Rodgers, right? So right. Like, you feel like the offense has to be the pick here, right?
Yeah. So one of two games, and the way we go is like, one, do you protect Jordan Love or do you give him weapons? Now, which honestly, if the Packers pick Smith Njigba after trading away Aaron Rodgers, that's kind of like, honestly, this is like the Russell Wilson trade, and then they go and draft, the Seahawks go and draft a left tackle. Right. That's hilarious. And you have the Packers doing exactly that. They draft the Ohio State receiver to give Jordan Love an elite receiver, while JSN's off the board for my case because he goes to the Texans. They go with Broderick Jones, the super athletic offensive lineman of Georgia, where his athleticism allows him to play anywhere. He could be a left tackle. He could be a guard. He could be a right tackle. I think he can play. He could play literally anywhere on that offensive line, couldn't he?
Yeah. And so, you know, if Bakhtiari comes back, you look at it and you go, okay, you're going to play right tackle. If Bakhtiari is still, and quite frankly, I don't pay attention enough to know what like his situation was injury wise. And it may be a situation where, you know, maybe they are looking at moving on from Bakhtiari now that, you know, it's all kind of coming apart, so to speak.
Yeah.
What's interesting is Zach Tom didn't play poorly last year, but you would think that, kind of similar to what we've talked about with Paris Johnson and the Cardinals, or Peter Skoronski and the Cardinals, or anything like that, you're looking at an upgrade thought process. The other thing is, you know, you've got questions like John Runyon isn't a bad right guard, but I think he's coming up on they're going to have to pay him. You know, and then Elton Jenkins is the other guy, I want to say, yeah, at left guard, and they're coming up on having to pay him. So you've got two guys, or they may have just paid him. So they may be feeling that they can't, you know, invest too much into into, or that they, yeah, they just paid Elgton Jenkins. So that's what it was. He signed a huge deal, 4 years, $70 million. Good player though, by the way. So maybe they're thinking that they got to get somebody in there in case Runyon needs to move on next year, or they're moving Tom inside or something like that. And then I look at it and I said, your starting wide receivers are Christian Watson, Romeo Doubs, and Samurai Toure. And I was like,
that's not a real name.
Yeah. Samori Toure. And so I was like, well, you better just take the best wide receiver in the draft and move on from there. So our buddy Justice Mosqueda had a couple thoughts. He's leaning. And so what's interesting is one of the guys for me is unavailable. And so he said he's leaning Darnell Wright, Lucas Van Ness, and Miles Murphy. And then he also said if they draft Dalton Kincaid that he's going to riot. So those are two things to know on that. So, but I could see, I mean, I just feel like they got to take a wide receiver to help Jordan Love. Like that was the thing. You could get away with low, you know, low end wide receivers when you have one of the greatest quarterbacks of all time. You cannot do it anymore if you're rolling out Jordan Love. Like that's just not fair to Jordan Love. You know, so you look at it, that's where I went. So that takes us to
number 14 with the Pats.
Yeah, the Pats picking high. That's odd. The Pats are one of those teams that you just kind of go, you never know what they're going to do. Do they trade back? They don't normally pick this high. So when they do, who are they going to take? I stayed put. You took
Bijan. That's where Bijan falls with them, which honestly, probably that's a great addition for a Mac Jones quarterback. It kind of gives them, honestly, if you kind of look at what that offense for Ryan Tannehill has done, Bijan Robinson, I think, can have that sort of impact for Mac Jones.
Right. And I went with Darnell Wright, the small, undersized right tackle, to see what he ends up doing. and I think he would be, I think he would be a great fit and a great kind of guy there. And so now the Jets are picking Jets, 15.
They're 15th. That was an interesting thing for me. Like, which way do you go? You've got your quarterback. They've already built that offensive line. They have the running back, and I don't like, you could go receiver, but I don't love the receivers that are right there. And they have a defensive coach. They added Jermaine Johnson last year on the edge. I have them going on the interior to pair with Quinnen Williams, Kalijah Kancey, out of Pitt. You know, the Aaron Donald twin. You can't say he's Aaron Donald, but there's a lot of things that remind you of Aaron Donald.
Yeah, that he does similarly, yeah.
But pairing him with Quinnen Williams, I think Robert Saleh would love that.
Right, and so you went there. I went with, they're having some issues with the big guy.
Mekhi Becton.
And Mekhi Becton. So I went with Broderick Jones there to try and fix that. Justin and I were talking about it. Do you think that they would pass, and you have them doing it, but you don't have them going O-line. Do you think they would pass on Darnell Wright out of kind of PTSD with what's going on with Becton? Or do you think because Wright's, 30-ish pounds lighter?
That would be, I think that would be a legit reason why they wouldn't do it. But yeah, and the reason why I had him passing on Darnell Wright is because and spoiler a lot as we get to the Steelers pick at 17, Wright to the Steelers has been matched a lot.
Yeah, and that's one that makes a lot of sense. I had the Steelers going up. They grabbed Paris Johnson to make sure that they got the guy that they wanted before the Cardinals could take him at 7. So,
the Commanders at 16, we both have the same position. We're saying cornerback, you have Witherspoon going, finally getting drafted. a little bit of a slide of what people thought. Devon Witherspoon out of Illinois. And I have the Commanders going with Joey Porter Jr., the very long, athletic corner out of Penn State, although there were some questions about his hips and lateral type movement. I think we kind of nailed it's just a matter of who's on the board, and obviously Witherspoon's on the board, so you go with him over Porter.
Yeah, and it's just one of those situations where, you know, you look at it and what fits, and I think you and I both kind of identified similar things there. Go get a corner that can help out a defense, even though it still feels like they need a quarterback.
Yeah. That said, but to take a quarter, especially with the cornerback position, it is one of the positions where the talent is pretty good. I mean, there's obviously, you've got your two Witherspoon and Gonzalez that you feel are like that they're the best bets. But like we talked about on our show on the cornerbacks, there's some pretty good guys you can get late in the first and the second, and even in the third, there's guys that you, well, it isn't like that with a lot of other positions.
Yeah. And that's, you know, what you look at and you see how these things fall. And that's why, you know, I would be interested, and you never, you know, really know this stuff, but I would be interested if they would go with, in this scenario, if they would have gone from either of us, Deonte Banks, you know, who's from Maryland.
You know, that wouldn't be a bad pick there either.
So it's just interesting to think about. But like you said, corner, I mean, it feels like it's going to happen. That takes you to the Steelers.
Well, me and the Steelers, I got Darnell Wright. I already talked about that. They need offensive line help. Getting that for Kenny Pickett and their running back as well, that's kind of a necessary thing to do. So that makes sense. Their Steelers already made their pick, so you've got the Lions picking at number 17. When in this case, you've got them making two consecutive picks at 17 and 18.
Right, and you talked about it with Kalijah Kancey. That's who I have them going here with. I mean, flip a coin, you can take either one, right? You know, and like you said, in this situation. But I went Kalijah Kancey, in Dan Campbell's defense, pairing him with Aiden Hutchinson. So now you've got an interior threat to go with, you know, a dynamic edge rusher. It's just one of those situations. And then with their second pick in the first round, which they have two first round picks, whether they traded from seven or not, is Michael Mayer. They traded away
TJ Hockenson.
TJ Hockenson, and now they get a guy that's, to me, a better all around player. May not have the physical upside that Hawk had, but like I like him a little bit better.
The Mayer thing is interesting because Jeff Risden, because there have been a lot of mocks that have either Kincaid or Mayer going to the Lions, and Jeff Risden has been pounding the table saying you're not paying attention. The reason why they traded Hockenson is they don't need someone like that. Now Mayer is a little more skilled across the board, but here's where I have the late Lions trading out. And it's not because of Mayer. It's because the Vikings, they see that there's a quarterback available, and they don't want to lose out on a quarterback that could go either to the Bucks or to the Seahawks because of the quarterback situation. And so I have the Vikings moving up from 23, even though it's a division trade. They move up to number 18, so they can take Tennessee's Hendon Hooker. Thinking for the future, Kirk Cousins not going to be there forever. Yes, Hooker's coming off an injury, so he's in a scenario, he's in a position where that's kind of the perfect scenario where you want him. You've compared Hooker to Geno Smith, which would make him a really nice fit in Seattle, but when you look at what the Bucks and the Seattle and the Seahawks are like quarterback wise, you can see why the Vikings, if they're kind of in position, would want to do that. So now I have the Lions moving back to 23. So number 18 goes Hendon Hooker to the Vikings, Michael Mayer to the Lions, and we go to pick number 19, where we have the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. And here I have them going with an edge rusher. Venice went off the board much earlier for you. At number 12, I have the Bucks taking Lucas Venice out of Iowa, giving Todd Bowles a guy to rush the passer.
Yeah, I like that. And I went with Brian Branch. You know, Bowles does a great job with those complex safeties that can come down into the slot or into the box and be, you know, a two-way guy. And I think that's what Branch gives them to pair with, like, Antoine Winfield and that. So,
and then we go to pick number 20, where we converge on Zay Flowers to the Seattle Seahawks. My thought was this. Tyler Lockett's getting old. Why not get a guy to replace him? And you pair him with DK Metcalf. And that's kind of my thought process there. They need receiver help. Like I thought for a second maybe you could, but I thought for a second maybe going tight end, but then I didn't. And so I go with a guy that there's lots of guys that are super excited about Zay Flowers. People would not be nearly as excited about Zay Flowers in other drafts, but he's one of the top receivers of the class. It's just the class isn't as good as, say, last year's class.
Right, and we both go Flowers, and then we both double up again with the Chargers.
Yep, we go receiver there. We have them both going with Jordan Anderson, Jordan Addison, the guy that had 100 catches out of Pitt, then transferred to USC. Devontae Smith vibes, given Justin Herbert another weapon. And with that, let's
a much different weapon,
yes,
than anybody they have right now.
Coming up next on the Rise of the C-Red podcast, the best of our Cardinals talk on the web, we will do the final 10 picks of the first round. Remember, there's only 31 picks because the Dolphins didn't get one. That's coming up next on Rise of C-Red. They're back on the Rise of C-Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. And guess what? For the third pick in a row, as we go to number 22, Baltimore Ravens, we haven't got to take of the same guy. Cornerback Deontay Banks, super athletic, super speedy, out of Maryland.
Yeah, he just doesn't seem like he's bound to be a Raven, like a guy that is physical, aggressive, one that would really fit with what they need defensively and continue to be a physical defense. And let's be completely honest, it's really hard to nail down what the hell the Ravens are going to do without them having signed
Lamar Jackson
yet, because you're just like, I don't know. I don't know.
Yeah.
So easy enough to just throw a great defensive back in their deepest class or the deepest position of the class.
We have the 23rd pick. Interestingly enough, we kind of have the same thoughts for the both teams. 23 is where the Vikings would have picked, and Seth has them to stay there because the Vikings picked at number 18. They went 17-18. And I have the Lions moved back, and they're at number 23. He had the Lions going with the defensive tackle with one of their picks. And guess what? I have the Vikings taking a defensive tackle, only it's Clemson Brian Breesy, a guy that's compared some. Like, I know Doug Farrar for Touchdown Wire gave his player comp as Darnell Dockett. And, you know, it's the same kind of thought process. I had them taking Will Anderson. And so let's give Dan Campbell a stud in the interior in Breesy. And you have the Vikings going with?
Yeah, I have them going with Hendon Hooker.
The guy that I had the Vikings taking, only trading up to get him.
Right, and so we'll see, you know, if that plays out that way, but it's something to think about.
We move on to number 24, the Jacksonville Jaguars. We go two different directions. I have them going with Nolan Smith, who went top 10 for Seth. And Nolan Smith, he's a tough player to peg right now. I've seen him projected top 10. I've seen him second round. But here's a position, here's a guy where you can pair him with Josh Allen, not the quarterback, but the guy they drafted for it in the first round in 2019, who was very productive as a rookie, and he's been pretty productive since then, giving them another super freaky athletic guy to rush the passer.
And I went the opposite, not super freaky athletic, and took Osiris Torrance, interior guard for them, to continue to grow and help Trevor Lawrence kind of find his next step.
And then we go on to the Giants, number 25. Guess what? There we are picking the same guy. The Giants have had two different starting centers the last 2 years. They went from Billy Price to John Feliciano. We have them taking the center that we wish the Cardinals could get with the 34th pick, John Michael Schmitz out of Minnesota. That gives Daniel Jones a kind of a stud right in front of him to give him the ball.
Yeah, and you know, it's one of those things that it seems like a bad secret, so maybe it's just such a bad secret that it's not going to happen, right?
Yeah. But wouldn't it be a bad thing if it didn't happen, especially if he ends up being around.
Well, and 34? That was our spoiler that, you know, we'd love Schmitz to be the pick. So let's say Schmitz is available at 34. You go Skoronski. Do you feel like you can double down at that spot and basically fix your interior offensive line in one draft? I mean hopefully, obviously, but
if he fell all the way, but you know, if I'm trying to predict the draft and kind of hit areas, I think round two is a good place to still get a cornerback. And maybe, and if I have a cornerback, you've got Forbes still on the board, Cam Smith, Keely Ringo. Forbes is going to go in the first round of my mock, but you still got some pretty decent cornerbacks that you really like. Or there's a couple of edge rushers out there that, you know, I've got my eyes on Keon White. I mean, as a guy that I think the Cardinals probably really like in terms of his physical specs and his style of play.
Yeah, he'll be an interesting one to kind of follow along with as we're not doing a round two.
No, not. That's way too hard.
That takes us to the Cowboys, and we have the same position, different guys.
Yep. Yeah, I've got this is the first tight end coming off the board with Michael Mayer. Compared him to Jason Witten. Jason Witten, who was a stud for the Cowboys, why not get Jason Witten again? Yeah, because you don't know, you know, how much longer are they going to have Dalton Schultz? And so, And then you've got them going with the other corner, the other tight end.
Yeah, the other Dalton Kincaid, and we'll see how that goes. And you know, I do worry about that pick in terms of his back, but, you know, we'll see what happens.
We go with the same guy again. The Buffalo Bills, they lost Tremaine Edmonds in free agency to the Bears. We have them both taking the very athletic Drew Sanders out of Arkansas, linebacker.
Yeah, and, you know, Justin and I talked about this last night because I had the same pick. And, you know, it's one of those things that I think this is what Bills fans want to see. So I think for us, we're like, oh, okay, that makes sense, because all the kind of areas you just covered, like a guy to replace a guy they lost, a guy that potentially could even be an upgrade, you know, one of those situations.
We go to the Bengals at number 28. We do differ again. I still see the Bengals wanted to fix that offensive line. And while they did add was Orlando Brown, Tyler Steen, from your podcast, an understated solid player that you're going to add to that line and feel good about for years to come out of Alabama.
Yeah, I like that pick. That was a surprising one, but I really liked it because I like the player. I went with a guy that I love. You know, in my mock draft where they obviously take Christian Gonzalez at 7 with the Raiders pick, it wouldn't matter if this guy gets to 34. But if they go a different route, if they follow your route, or if you go, you know, a different route and don't take Gonzalez, I went with the Emmanuel Forbes to the Bengals. That's a guy I would love to see find a way to 34 if they don't go corner at with their first pick.
Number 29, the Saints. Different directions. I have them going with Dalton Kincaid, giving them a tight end that's not kind of tight end quarterback. That gives them a legit pass catcher as a tight end, hailing back to the days when they had Jimmy Graham. Only he's not Jimmy Graham, but kind of the same type of idea, the type of weapon that he can be.
And I went with Brian Breesy. You had him go into the Lions, interior dog. I think that they continue to try to, finagle their way in what's going to happen. I just don't know how they're going to get it done, because it's going to be really interesting what the Saints do because they're, picking so late, and they do have so many question marks still.
We go to the Eagles with the 30th pick, the second to last pick in the first round. We have the same position. You have them going with Joey Porter Jr. I've got them going with Emmanuel Forbes, who just came off the board 2 picks before on your mock.
Yeah, and I have them going with the guy you took earlier at 16 to the Commanders, Joey Porter Jr. Same thought process. I think either of those guys, and I said, Joey Porter Jr., his high end there is a guy like James Bradbury,
where who is on the Eagles.
Yeah. Yeah. And so think about that.
Well, and it makes a lot of sense for them to go cornerback there, because their two starters in Darius Slay and James Bradbury are both.
Yeah. In their 30s.
Young. They're not young.
And that's the thing is, like, think about that. If they added Tyree Wilson and Emmanuel Forbes, or Nolan
Holy
Smith and
cow.
And Joey Porter Jr., or any combination of those four guys, like, just think about them reloading, like you talked about, with guys getting up there in age and just finding a way to continue to make it work. And that takes us to the end of the draft, and we
shake hands and make the same pick again.
Right. And so let me ask you this, because we were talking about this a lot last night on our pod, because I made this same pick. What do you think, that they're in a spot where Mahomes is so good that they don't need to draft a wide receiver early? Or do you think that the guy we have them picking in Quentin Johnston is a guy that's an upgrade from like a Juju Smith-Schuster, but utilized in the same way, right?
Yeah, that's exactly what I thought. I thought they lost Juju. Here's a younger version with a higher ceiling.
So we go with Quentin Johnston, a guy, a physical, big body wide receiver, kind of
be a great pick for the Cardinals at 34.
Yeah, so that wraps up.
But
the draft.
Yeah,
but
the one thing
really
about Johnston for me is, okay, if that's the play, does that take D-Hop off the board for them as a trade partner for the Cardinals?
Yeah, I think it would. But something you've talked about. What if at 34 they traded, and especially with what we just saw with Rodgers, what if they traded 34 and Hop for like 25? And maybe a third round pick or a fourth round pick or something like that. Would you be on board with that?
Yeah, if they were to add, it wouldn't be ideal, because I know they want more picks on day two. But if you get a day three pick, plus you slide up higher, maybe you can land your center in John Michael Schmitz, and then you complete the offensive line in the first round.
Yeah, it'll be really interesting to see how this all unfolds. But I got to say, it's been a fun draft, but I'm also like really ready for it to be over.
Yes, finally. We will not have a show later this week. This is where you need to pay attention to Seth's podcast later in the week, because as I recall in previous years, they record basically as the draft is unfolding and then you get their reactions. I can't do that. I can't.
No,
do
but
that.
you'll also be at the facility.
So yeah, I will be at the facility. You can read my stuff in print form, in internet print form, because I will have so many articles written over the weekend. But no, we will be back next week to then talk about how the draft played out. So that's Seth Cox. This is Jess Root. We just wrapped up the first round, our 9th annual mock draft. We'll be back again next week. Thanks for listening.
Thanks for listening to the latest edition of the Rise Up See Red podcast. Listen to previous episodes and subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher Radio, Audioboom, or many other podcast platforms so shows are delivered directly to your mobile device. Please give the show a 5-star rating and always support the sponsors who support the show. We'll be back soon for the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Rise up, Red Sea, be Red Sea Red, and of course, Rise Up, Sea Red.
Whoa!